The Founding Fathers, American Revolution, our Constitution, our history, America. Thanks so much for tuning in as we discuss the people, places, events, and battles that turned 13 separate colonies into the greatest nation on earth, the United States.
I'm so glad that you tuned in. We are sitting down with Kyle Stone, author of a new book called Values We Hold Dear. It's a phenomenal read, a quick read, but packed full of amazing history and ways that you and your local community can get involved. It's a fantastic book that I highly recommend, and I have the links for you to order it in the show notes. So now, here's the interview with Kyle Stone. Hey everyone, Ron here with the Patriot Power Podcast. We are in for a real great show. We have a special guest here, Kyle Stone. He has an amazing book that we will get to if I can show it to you. There we go. And we're going to learn all about that. You got to get this book. Order the book. You can get it on Amazon. It has some really cool things in it. He has some freebies that you get out of the deal, which I have all over my fridge and my laptop and stickers and all that fun stuff. So I want to introduce Kyle Stone, and he's going to talk about himself, give a little bit of background, and then we'll dive into this amazing book. It's a quick read, but don't let that fool you. It is chocked full of amazing principles, and all from our founding fathers. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you get to see the video. But obviously, you may be listening to this because we have this in my podcast. So welcome, Kyle. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to talk with you. It's good to see you again. So a little bit about myself. So I am a New Englander by birth. And why was that important? Well, because I was steeped in our Revolutionary War period history. I grew up in a small town, famous for, had some famous Revolutionary War figures in it. And so that became a part of life for me. And in our community, that was celebrated quite a bit. And so I enjoyed being a part of that during, we celebrated Memorial Day, the 4th of July. It was a wonderful, very wonderful experience. And my parents, you know, they taught, or they encouraged the teaching of true American principles. And as a matter of fact, in one of the stories of the book, there's a little snippet of a July 4th parade that my parents took us to. Well, that's actually a true story. It's my brother and I, our first 4th of July parade. It's just an introduction. So
Oh, nice.
That's very important to us, to me. My background has been in technology for a number of years. And I've also lived out west. So I actually have gone to school. I couldn't stand the new, as much as I love New England and love Connecticut, couldn't stand the New England winter. So I ended up heading out west to warmer climates, and have lived all in Hawaii and up and down the West Coast until recently. And then that's how you and I met. I moved to Idaho a couple years ago after, well, shall we say, California issues.
And yeah, you and about 100,000 others, right?
And about me and about 100,000 others. And it wasn't a crazy move. My wife actually had family here as well, so there were other mitigating factors that had us move. But yes, so my background in terms of education and whatnot is that I actually have a degree in history from Brigham Young University. And I also have an MBA from the University of Washington and a master's from the Defense Naval War College in Defense and Strategic Studies. So I also have an AIT, an Associate in Information Technology. So my education background is all over the place, as well as
wow. How many initials do you have after your name?
A number, actually.
A lot.
Technically, if I did it, and that's just the nature of being in technology and whatnot. You have to continually update your skills. And
I just put ADHD after mine, and people think I have some sort of degree, but I'm just, that's a warning to others, like, you know.
No, one of the best things that happened in my life, I believe, and I'm just reflecting on this now, is my mother. My mother was an avid reader, and she instilled that attribute in me. She would always, literally, always have a book in hand or within arm's reach, whether it be in the car, next to her, the couch, wherever. She was always reading, which had a huge, huge influence on me. And that influence was helpful when I actually, as I was growing up, because then I became very well read in a broad, wide variety of subjects. And like I said, my degrees are all over the place. So anywhere from technology, history, business, whatever. And so that's who I am. It's somebody that's very intent on learning, but yeah, that's it.
Well, my mother was similar in that respect. And, I think it's, people look at, I should say some people look at books and say, I'll just listen to it, which I love audiobooks, or I'll just get it online. The problem with those kind of books is once it's printed and in my possession here, nobody can change the contents of this. Nobody can change this. That's why I love and always encourage people to get books. And books, obviously, back in the revolutionary days, that was their entertainment, that was their education, that was their internet. And you look at all those people that we all now know, Washington, Thomas Jefferson, of course, who donated his books for the Library of Congress, John Adams, who did nothing but devour books, and so on and so on. And even today, if you look at if you were to look at a home of a this will sound bad, but of an average person, and you look at a home of a very successful person, and I'm not referring to just money, but a successful person, they both those houses will have bedrooms and bathrooms, but one room that the more successful, content people have, they have a library. So young listeners, take heed to the guy with 12,000 degrees and books. They're a treasure. And obviously I can't whip my camera around, but mine are all full of American Revolution. So anyway, so
You can see
you've
mine
traveled
there.
the world. Yeah. You've traveled the world and lived in a lot of places, big influence from your mother, which is so key with reading. And is that what made you say, you know what? Instead of just reading about a book, maybe I should write one. What was your motivator? What was your aha moment like? I've never written a book before. I'm going to write a book.
Sure. Do you mind if I share my screen?
Oh yeah, please.
That'd probably be easier, to more entertaining for the audience to kind of see the little backstory behind it. So I'll give you a little bit of backstory.
Awesome.
So let's see if this will. Okay. Well, how many of you remember 2020? It wasn't too long ago, and a lot of bad stuff was happening. We saw a pandemic, which locked us in. We saw riots going on in major cities. It was considered the summer of love by a certain Seattle mayor, but we knew that something was afoot and something was drastically changing. And I was away. I was actually overseas at the time. And one of my friends from high school, who I became really, I didn't know her that well in high school. I mean, we were more acquaintances, but over the years on Facebook, we actually became friends and discovered how much we actually had in common. And one of the things that she sent out as this meme was what you see here. And I won't read the entire thing. You can read it for yourself, but it's pretty much a, you know, there was once a time. Once upon a time in America, we were strong, we were united. It didn't matter our race or religion or background. and our flag unified us. And there was a time that we, the people, were united and strong. And then this is what really hit me. How many men and women in uniform are currently serving on the front lines abroad, only to look back in horror to see their homeland on fire? That hit me very, very hard. That hit me hard.
For
And
sure.
so, what I did, and now keeping an open mind, because what was happening, and as part of this summer of 2020, was all of this information was coming out about our history. And I was looking at it, I'm going, that's not what I was taught. Remember, going back to my opening statement, I grew up steeped in American history. And so I'm going, that was not what I was taught. Now, understanding that I also could be taught wrong, and understanding, and I get it as a guy with a history background, I get that history is in the eye of the beholder sometimes. And there you have to take a comprehensive look at what was happening to get a true understanding of what an event or a historical event or something that happened during a time period.
Kyle, can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Because I think it's important, especially for those listening on the podcast. Can I read this, what you have up here?
Sure.
So there was a time when our accomplishments meant something. There was a time when these United States of America, one nation under God, was united. There was a time when these United States of America, one nation under God, was united under the American flag, a flag that was carried in battle by brave patriots as a symbol of freedom and justice for all, no matter the race, religion, background, a beacon of hope when flown, a mark of respect to their memory to those who willfully sacrificed their lives to defend. There was a time when we, the people, decided our future. We, the people, had a voice. And there was a time when we, the people, were united and strong. There was a time when the media was free from political bias and corruption. And there was a time when our elected leaders stood their ground, dug in, and defended those they represented. And here's the part that Kyle was talking about. How many men and women in uniform are currently serving on the front lines abroad, only to look back in horror to see their homeland on fire? What does the word patriot mean to you? I know you said you didn't want to read that, but I think it's real important for the context of, that you're talking about, that our audio listeners, and that's a powerful. So anyway, go ahead now.
No, I appreciate that. Yes, thank you for doing that. That was good, good call. So, having recognized that, there's also different interpretations within a historical event, I was open-minded and I was like, okay, well, maybe I was taught wrong about some of our founding fathers. And so, what I did is I, and everybody that all the statues that were being torn down. So I was like, maybe I should do a little bit of research into this. And so I went to a local library. And in that library, I started pulling books. And what's important to understand is that I wasn't just pulling any books, I was pulling books that represented primary sources, sources written and recopied from the original authors to what they actually said. So I was pulling letters from the American Revolution, the creation on the debate and the debate of the Constitution of the United States, letters from Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, et cetera. So I was looking at that really, really carefully. And what I discovered when I was sitting there on during my downtime reading these books was, holy cow, I really thought I understood the founding fathers. And not only was I taught what not only what was I taught correctly in my schools and by my family and my parents, but there's a whole depth to them that I didn't even understand. There was something I mean, they were really not only just brilliant, but they understood human nature, and they understood nature of bondage versus freedom. And they were working really hard as a society and as a people to make a land of freedom. And man, and the virtues that they talked about, what was the beginning of my journey into understanding and writing this book.
So what you're saying is that when you started, and I think people that really get into whether it's the Civil War or any part of history, we hear the highlights and maybe even dig a little bit, scratch the surface. But once you start looking at their own writings and diaries, it's mind-boggling on the depth of being so aware of what was at risk between being under England's dominion and being truly free. It's like you said, it's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, it was we learn how far we've detracted in a lot of ways, unfortunately, as well. Because they were on the right path and they were setting us up for success. Well, what I was taught, what I felt based on my own personal research was correct. And again, I was open to being disagreed or being taught or not being taught, but being challenged in a different way. But I was just finding these things in these letters, and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know Thomas Jefferson said this or George Washington said that about any topic, whether it talked about governments or banking or slavery or whatever it was. I mean, they understood human nature pretty darn well. And so when I got home, I was the October of 2020. And so we were still in the pandemic and we were approaching the election. And I was noticing these signs popping up all over our neighborhood. And for lack of a better word, I thought there was a lot of virtue signaling going on. And so I decided, well, I'm going to create my own sign. And what I did is I created this sign. And basically, what it is what I call the values we hold dear. And it reads, and I'll go ahead and read this for the podcast listeners. In this house, we believe in God, faith, miracles, prayer, and objective science. We support the United States Constitution and learn accurate U.S. history. Well, you heard my story just a few minutes ago, where that came from. We honor the Declaration of Independence and the Founding Fathers. We stand for Old Glory. We believe in education and critical thinking, not indoctrination. We support local businesses and capitalism to build community. We support the military, local law enforcement, and first responders. We recognize that every life has value and reject racism. We embrace responsibility and reject victimhood. We believe men and women are equal, and we believe in charity, love, respect, kindness, and living aloha. And there's a little story behind that as well, if we want to get into that later.
This is what's and I think when people buy a book, or maybe they don't even have to buy the book, but they can get this, and it's a magnet. At least mine is a magnet. You probably have yard signs and stuff like that. But if this could be on a bumper sticker, let me tell you, because it really covers all bases. And there's not one of these that I, or hopefully any of our listeners, would disagree with. But it's nice to have up, because every time I'm in the kitchen, I look at it, and it just is a little subtle reminder that even though our country seems very chaotic and exceptionally confused right now, it's still the best country on the planet. And these particular bullet points and beliefs and values are just awesome. I just think you hit a home run with this in
Well, thank
particular.
you. No, I appreciate that. So yes, I did that, and I did this with a lot of thought. And part of the reason why I created not just the sign, but also the magnets related to that, is so that when you have, say, your children or your grandchildren, depending on how old you are, I've got a couple grandchildren myself. Now, one day they may ask you a simple question like, "What does Old Glory mean? I stand for Old Glory. I don't understand that." And then you can have an opportunity right there to give a little bit of a lesson on the importance of the national flag, the symbol of unity, why it was important, and how it was formed, and what it means. So it's an idea here to give an opportunity for folks to actually sit down and talk with their families and pass on some of these values from one generation to the next.
Yeah, that's outstanding. And you know what? Excuse me, the third one, honor the Declaration and founding fathers. I get this a lot, and maybe you do too, but it, you know, I hear from a select group that, you know, this country was founded on slavery and it was just a bunch of white old men, slave owners, that were controlling the country. And I can see how superficially, from a satellite view, that may appear. But if you look into it, I mean, if you look at the ages of the people that signed the Declaration, that risked it all, their honor, their money, their life, and you look at the age, average age of the people that were involved with the creation of the Constitution, I think the Declaration average was like 38 years old. Don't quote me. But the Constitution was like 42, and we had as young as 26 and as old as 81 with Benjamin Franklin. But the founding fathers were not just three people that were 85 years old and gray haired. And if you've dove into the American Revolution in any capacity, you would know that. I'll be quiet now.
No, that's a great point. I was just thinking of Thomas Jefferson. He was young. He was very
young. He was.
He drafted the Declaration of Independence. And there's two points I want to make about Thomas Jefferson, because there has been a strong, strong desire to cancel him, remove his statues from places of honor. One of them, and it's, I remember when I was doing the research, I'm paraphrasing, so it's, I'm stretching back in my brain a little bit, but one of the stories I remember about him was, when he was a delegate in the House of Burgesses in Virginia, a motion came to the floor by, he was a colonel, as all I remember, by some gentleman and a colonel, to abolish slavery in Virginia. They kind of knew where things were, or there were some people that understood where things were going. And certainly in the North, the Adamses, for instance, they were totally, totally anti-slavery.
Yeah, they never owned a slave. And
never
and
did.
Are you upset about this? It just drives me batty. There is not still one monument, one area of reverence in D.C. of John Adams.
That's
not
that
one.
Horrible.
And I think one of the best writers, authors of 1776 and in general is David McCullough. And that was his major passion that he had been working on for 3 years. Unfortunately, he passed away. So I don't know where that piece is. But yeah, he's the only founding father that does not have like a monument like Washington and Jefferson and, you know, everybody else seems to have that. And it just, and I love John Adams. He's probably my second favorite founding father. And anyway, just,
That is a shame. I'll tell you who my favorite is in a minute. And it's in one of the Adamses as well. So Colonel gets up and he advocates to get rid of slavery in Virginia. Well, you know who seconded that motion? It was Thomas Jefferson. I think he was 23 or 24 at the time. He was a young man. He seconded the motion to end slavery in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Unfortunately, it was not a popular idea in Virginia. And so they were shot down. And as a matter of fact, that colonel was shot down pretty hard. He basically lost a lot of friends over this. I think he may have even lost his seat in the House of Burgesses. But you fast forward just months later, Thomas Jefferson, he drafts the Declaration of Independence. In that draft, he actually writes a piece about, or basically blaming King George for the importation of slaves into the colonies. And he calls it a wrong, he calls it an evil. And for those of you who don't believe me, just look it up. There is a, you know, Thomas Jefferson on slavery, Declaration of Independence, Google it. And there is an actual clause in there that unfortunately was the only clause that was removed during the debates on the Declaration of Independence. And that was simply because the reality was, whether or not we like it, there were certain states, and they weren't all Southern, by the way. They weren't all Southern. It wasn't just South Carolina and Georgia. There were states in the North as well that profited off of slavery, that they were like, I'm not quite sure if I'm quite ready to put this particular piece of or this clause in quite yet. But the reality was is that they were all heading in that direction, and they were making strident efforts to contain slavery with the idea to eventually phase it out and have it gone for good.
Well, let's talk a
So,
little bit about slavery because it's a topic that is thrown around today and people are getting reparations. That's a whole nother show. But now there was about a half million slaves in 1775, if I remember right. And that's a lot, considering the entire population was about 2 million. But what people don't understand is that, let's say, Thomas Jefferson, who ended up over his lifetime owning around 600 slaves, if he woke up one morning and said, "You know what, I'm done," and freed all of his slaves, he would be breaking the law. And you are allowed to release one slave per year. Well, if you own more than 300, like George Washington did, you're probably not going to live to 300 years. And secondly, I think most knew it was wrong, but they did not know how to get rid of it on a slow basis. And it would take another 100 years, a civil war, to finally cut that cord. But what would you do with 500,000 people if they were freed at once? No homes, no skills, no trades. So it was a very difficult topic. Plus, let's not forget, that is how many founding fathers and people of that generation made their money. So, they knew it was wrong, but they didn't want to be in the poorhouse either. So it was a very contentious topic. But I think people need to understand that they just couldn't release them all at once. And like George Washington, when he was born and his father died, and George Washington was young, he inherited 138 slaves. So it's even if he was totally against it, he became a slave owner whether he wanted them or not. And so there's a, is slavery wrong? Yes. Was there an easy way to appease and ensure that they would have prosperous, fair lives during this time? No, there just wasn't. And it would take another century to figure all that out. And that's why the Declaration doesn't mention the word slavery. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in because I get that a lot. How do you love the American Revolution? It's just a bunch of white old slave owners. And I'm like, my job is not to convince you, but hopefully to educate you. And this is why we're doing this too. So
That is exactly the tact I take. And you keep in mind also that some of the founding fathers were actually slaves at one point. And let me explain that. Like Benjamin Franklin, let's talk about him. Indentured servitude was a form of slavery. Indentured servitude was a form of slavery. Benjamin Franklin didn't like it too much. He was indentured servant to his brother, if I remember correctly.
yep.
Didn't like it. Packed his stuff, took some money, basically fled to from Boston to Philadelphia, if I remember correctly, because of that. Another area that I remember is that I think my recollection, I'd have to double check this, so don't. I'm not 100% sure. I have not found the primary source on this, but my recollection was is that indentured servitude, eventually what would end up happening is that the person would pay off their debt to their master, if you will, and then they would be able to be free to be able to practice whatever they had learned over all those years. Well, there was the reason why slavery started to become like permanent slavery became an issue is because there were some indentured servants that we're doing a very poor job and we're not considered, they weren't doing a very good job. And so they went to their owners went to court and said, hey, look, they're supposed to be doing this and they're not doing a good job. I got the proof of it. And next thing you know, the courts ruled in their favor, said, yeah, well, I guess you get to keep them for a while longer. And in some cases, it was the rest of their lives. So.
Yeah, and Benjamin Franklin, I mean, not only did he not like working for his brother, I mean, he was beaten up by his brother.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he was pretty physically abused by him for no reason, other than his older brother was jealous of Benjamin Franklin because he, you know, would come up with the Silence Do Good and all these other things that, like, how come I can't do this? But yeah, it was a bad deal. And let's not forget, and everybody would get this question wrong on any level, college, high school, or grade school, or adult. Were there slave owners during this period that were black? Yes, there was. So, albeit small, I'm not justifying anything here, but it was a complex, very complex, convoluted topic for sure.
Do
And
you
you bring
mean
up an excellent point, you know. Indentured servant. Yeah, I mean, Benjamin Franklin was one. And he, you know, he didn't like it. He had, I think, a handful of slaves, but he eventually got to the point where he didn't need them or want them anymore, and he knew it was wrong, and he was in a position to get rid of them. Benjamin Franklin didn't have 8,000 acres that needed picked and worked. The ground didn't need worked, like George Washington and at Mount Vernon and Thomas Jefferson at Monticello and Monroe and Madison and all the others. And that's the other reason I really honor and respect John Adams. He never owned a slave in his life. But let's look at that for one second. Why? Because his parents didn't. And why? Because their parents didn't. But George Washington's grandfather did. George Washington's father did. And they all get passed down. But anyway, enough about that.
No, I just want to make sure. When you said that there were a number of a very small minority of was it black slave owners? Is that what
Yeah,
you said? Yeah.
African Americans
Okay.
that own slaves. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And there were also white slaves as well, from Ireland and whatnot. So it's slavery has had a complex history.
For
Again,
sure.
100% agree with you. Is it
And
wrong?
by the way, and I'm trying not to monopolize your time, although we don't have a time limit, but these old white guys didn't get on a ship and go to Africa and bring slaves here. Slavery, by the way, folks, was active in Britain and England, and they were brought over by non-quote Americans. So we didn't bring slavery to the United States, although we didn't do too much early on to stop it either. So a lot of education that needs to be behind slavery, but this magnet reminder is so powerful. I love it. It's excellent.
And one more point on this topic. We go back to the Adamses. So one, my favorite was actually Samuel Adams, who also hated slavery. But I'll put that aside. But one of the stories in the book that I do write about is an interaction. And this is a letter from Abigail Adams. And she writes of an interaction that she had between herself and one of her neighbors. And the chapter, the title is called A Young Lad's Dream. Long and short, she had a hireling who was black who wanted to go to school. She said, "Great, you get the permission of the headmaster, and I'll not only can you go to school, I'll pay for it." Right. So here you have the lady of the house saying that, "Yep, you should get an education. He's about 14 years old, and you should, as long as you get the requisite permission, go for it." And so everything was going well until one of the neighbors heard about this. And this neighbor, as I understand it, was actually a Revolutionary War hero as well. And he was asking, "Well, I'm not quite sure if this is such a good idea." He kind of gets into this He doesn't want to admit that he's the one that has the problem, but he kind of dances around it. And Abigail Adams let him have it in her polite way, but she pretty much told him, hey, look, we just fought a war of independence. Is this what you mean by freedom? By having somebody not have the opportunity to better themselves and better their minds just because they happen to be Black? That's wrong. I mean, that's basically what she communicated to him. And she wrote this letter to her husband, John, who was president at the time. So there, my point is that there is a, from the beginning, there were those that recognized the evils of slavery, and they were doing, actively doing what they could to minimize it and then eventually get rid of it.
Yeah. Well said.
So, yeah, so I had this sign and I would get, actually, interestingly, as I posted it, and keep in mind, I was in California at the time, I would get people asking me, hey, where did you get that sign? I'd have people literally come to my door, knocking on my door. Where did you get that sign? You have any extra? Can I buy any from you? Et cetera, et cetera. So eventually I started selling a few, and I mean, I'm not talking a whole lot, but a few. And then I eventually ended up, there we go. Then I ended up getting associated with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Steve Turley, who is a classical education scholar. And he actually wrote the foreword to the book. And through him, I started learning about these concepts because he's a classical scholar. He understands, he has two PhDs, one in anthropology, one in religion. He understood the concepts of, and taught about the concepts of virtue. And I didn't understand virtue at all. I didn't understand, I mean, you know, I thought virtue meant just being a good person, you know, be a good person and you'll be virtuous. Uh-oh, nope. That's not what the founding fathers meant by virtue. That was another thing I learned. And he gave me pretty much a crash course on philosophy, and with the idea that there are four fundamental virtues that were the pillars of our society. And those four fundamental virtues were wisdom, temperance, justice, and courage. Wisdom, which basically means, you know, making sure that you think the long term, you make decisions based not on the whim of the moment, but on what will be beneficial to a community, to a society, to a family, to an individual in the long term. Temperance, also, you know, not being impulsive, but save, like, instead of spending your money, for instance, on a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, you save your money over time so that you can enjoy prosperity in the long term. Justice, equal justice under the law. We have to remember that the British were very, very, very unkind to the colonists. They did not treat the colonists well. They were second-class citizens. And boy, if you dared in any way to stand up for yourself or stand up for your family or stand up for something that you're, what you believe in, they came down on you hard and there was no recourse and you could be killed easily. Yep. And so this concept of justice was very important. That's why we have the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution to ensure that a government can't overstep its bounds. And then courage, which defends all of the other virtues that they practiced and believed in. And courage is very, very important. And that's where what we need today. And so this is my attempt, my courageous attempt, if you will, to inject my voice and my, from what I've learned and what I believe and what I've seen and what I've experienced. Because like you said, I have traveled the world and I've seen, I love different cultures. I've experienced different things, but man, America is quite special. Mm-hmm. And on those four fundamental virtues are built the values. And so that's how that came to be. And then Ralph Cochran, who is also on the slide, is the CEO of Turley Talks. And he introduced the idea to me of writing a book. He was like, hey, I have an idea for you. You should write a book on this. And I'm like, a book? Now, of course, I'm well-read, but man, writing a book is, that sounds like it's hard. And let me tell you, it's hard. It is hard to write a book. But this journey that I've been on as I've been doing this has been not just a temporal journey, but it's also been very much a spiritual journey. And that spiritual journey and that temporal journey is to reconnect us to who we are as Americans. And so most books, when they have values or virtues that they talk about, even the patriotic books, you know, what they stand for is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I have a number of them. I've read a number of them. They're good. But I think what makes this book unique is that it relates to a particular point in history. It gives a story, an interesting story of something that happened in history. And then it relates that same value and that virtue to what's happening today. And asking you, all of you who are members of this audience, what can I do in order to propel the cause of freedom, justice, wisdom, temperance, courage, liberty, all of that? What can I do? And yeah, I give you examples of what you can do.
That's what I really enjoy. And, you know, regardless of your political leanings or beliefs, this book really spells out how it was and how it relates to today. And it does, it bridges that gap, and it brings the now and the then together. And that you just do a fantastic job. And that's why I want everybody listening or watching, got to get a copy of this book. The links to get these books will be in the podcast notes as well as the YouTube description. So if you haven't bought a book this year, you should have bought several by now, but get this, Values We Hold Dear, because it's phenomenal.
And I'm going to be bold here with the audience and say, with your audience and say, hey, maybe not just buy one book, buy a few. And it's not because, you know, I want you to, you know, spend a bunch of money, and it's not about me. That's not what it is. What this is about us, all of us, trying to make a difference and trying to figure out ways in which we can do something and show our support for the United States of America as it had been truly founded and as it had been truly designed by our founding fathers, and as it had been fought for by many, many folks all the way to the present. All the things that, you know, all the wars that have happened, whether it be World War I, World War II, Global War on Terror, whatever. It's important to understand that we are now at a point in time. We are all at a point in time where voting really isn't enough. And I hate to say it, and I know we're really busy, and I hate to, you know, seem like I'm taxing your time more, but there's little things that we can do that if we all do it and we practice it, even just a little bit at a time, it will make a big, big, big difference to restoring liberty.
Yeah. Amen.
I believe that with all my heart.
And well, and you think about, you know, what can I do? Like, I'm working three jobs just to pay rent, and yeah, I can't buy food. What? I don't have time for that. But you should carve out some time. I mean, picture 365 million in this country now. If everybody just gave 10 minutes a month, I'm horrible at math. Some wizard out there has probably already done it. I mean, how many hours is that? I mean, together, we, the people, can make a difference. It's very difficult for one person or two people to make a sustainable change, but we, the people, certainly could if we took an active role. And I think knowing how it was at the forming and the creation of our amazing country to where it is now, that's why you need to know your history. You don't need to know your history because we all hear that, right? History, if you don't know your history, it repeats itself. In actuality, you need to know your history because understanding that history will tell us exactly why we are where we are today. Not that it will repeat itself. That's a overused saying, in my opinion. But the study of history will give you a roadmap of why are we here? Like, you know, I'm sure I hear it all. How did this country get to this point? Where, you want to know how? Go back to the creation of our history. It will show you. And that's why studying history and understanding the people, the places, the battles, the events that helped form our country. That's why it's important. And you don't have to be a history nerd like me that has, you know, a declaration and a constitution in my pocket all the time. I mean, we teach kids at our Christian co-op once a week too, but you have to understand and know the history if you want to know why we are where we are today.
Right. And one of the most dangerous things that is happening in our society, and it, and not just us, it's happening globally, is the purposeful erasure of our history. And that is really scary. And that goes back to your earlier point, which I've heard you talk say before, but it's stuck with me, and it's actually absolutely brilliant. Once you have a hard copy of a book, it can never be changed.
That's right.
I think of the one of the little snippets I remember writing about in the book, just as a reference point. In the book 1984, this main character Winston, do you remember what his job was?
I should, but I don't.
Okay. His job, he worked, and I can't remember what the department was, but basically he worked in the department that took books. And if there was anything in those books that were contrary to the doctrine of the day, his job was to help identify it and help make sure that it gets into the incinerator so that they could rewrite the history. Well, in a lot of ways, with electronics, that's easy to do. As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting. One of these sources that I used in the book that I was trying to refine and re-reference, well, things have changed. And I'm kind of going, wait a second, you know, or at least it hasn't been an out and out change of the actual quote, but it has been an out and out change of the source from which the quote was found. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a little suspicious. And I've heard this from others as well. It's not me just experiencing this. And that is a very scary thing. And so one of the reasons why this book is great, and if you're a military person, the way I describe it is that it is a medical kit, an ammunition box, and a field manual all in one book. It actually has the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution in here, as well as the Bill of Rights. And it also has these stories and the steps from which you can take, and ideas which you can use in order to help you, your families, your communities, your state, your nation.
Yeah, it's for sure. I mean, it really is something. And like, I love your idea. I've published a couple books that are on Amazon too as well. And no, you don't get really rich from writing books, folks. So you can buy 5 of these and hand out to your kids or your parents or your friends. Write a little special note in there. I found when you give a book, you know, you give somebody a business card, that's great, and gets in the trash as soon as you get home, maybe even sooner. But when you hand somebody a book, it's super uncommon. And 2, people will read it. And this is worth your time. And like I said, it's a quick read. It's packed full of amazing things, but it's a fairly quick read. And so I highly encourage everybody to do that. And going back to your point about the ease of going into a website and changing the quote or changing the source, it's just seconds to do that. And erasing history, that's kind of what has happened. You know, they want to get rid of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial, which is way off the beaten path. I mean, you have to walk a ways to get to it. But that, you know, so when you see George Washington or any statue, Robert E. Lee, that was just recently removed, the Ten Commandments that have been removed. When you start seeing that, don't think that it's just a small group of kids in a gang that just want to cause issue and they're just toppling statues. That is the exact start, maybe even further along than the start, of how you erase history. Picture this in your mind. If over the next 40 years, every monument, every historical figure that is up on, if Mount Rushmore was blown away, if the Washington Monument was blown up, if Monticello and all these other homes of these amazing men, if they were all gone, In 75 years, do you think those kids and adults at that time would have any inkling of what happened? That is the danger of erasing or changing history. And so when you get a physical book, you can't change it. And so it's important to add to your library. And if you don't have a library, well, I'm in an apartment. Okay, go to a store and get six plastic bins for $5. And that's your library. Just read, 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 read.
I 100% agree. Our founding fathers had thousands of books, thousands. And like you said, they were expensive at the time.
Way
That is,
expensive.
yep.
And I mentioned this when you gave the talk at the Sons of the American Revolution, but when they issued the Stamp Act, which taxed paper and a slew of other things, even England knew how important books were. Books were not included in any of their countless acts or taxes that they imposed on the colonists. So they, as crazy and bad as they were, they even understood how important books were. And Thomas Jefferson, obviously, is the most famous. He had thousands. You probably know the details, but yeah, well, that's how Library of Congress. What's that? Well, it started with him, and others donated as well. So anyway, we won't beat a dead horse. I'll let you continue.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much how this book came to be, is connecting the timeless virtues and values from the ancient, from the divine to the ancients to the founders to the present day. This is what the book is really all about, is putting a string, if you will, across time and space and giving us hope. And that's fundamentally what the book is trying to communicate. It's like, look, all is not lost unless you allow it to be. But it takes each and every one of us. And it starts with us to reconnect, retether ourselves to those ancient values and virtues that have been interwoven into our society and into our, on purpose by our founders, purposely interwoven into our society in order to ensure the freedom of man and woman for all time. And that is all I've got.
So I got to ask, for the podcast folks, this is going to be rough, but in the middle you have founders. So that's George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson. The far right is obviously my favorite lady of all time, Abigail Adams, of that era at least. Who's the gal next to Abigail Adams?
Dolley Madison. She
That would have been my guess.
yeah, she was very, very important. There's a story in her story in the book about her as well. Dolley Madison was amazing. When an absolute treasure to our society. Men and women in this that during that time were, I understand that folks will say, oh, well, there was no equality and that women couldn't own property, et cetera, et cetera. I understand that there were some of these laws, I get it, but man, that does not mean that women didn't play an exceptionally important part. And they were definitely equal in terms of influencing important men into building a society that eventually enabled women's rights. Women are very, very important in this battle for liberty, exceptionally important. My mother is an important part of that in my, for my upbringing. So you will never see me say that there's a that women are second class citizens. They weren't. And folks like Madison, Dolley Madison and Abigail Adams showed the way of and lit the torch, if you will, of ensuring equality of women in these times.
Yeah, and Martha Washington too. I mean,
Martha Washington too.
everyone thinks of Martha Washington as this old, plump, short lady. Well, she was when she was very old, but little people, very few people understand that she spent a lot of times at the camps with Washington, and not with Washington sitting in a house having tea. She was out with the other ladies, the camp followers, knitting and making socks and clothes for them. And she spent many, many years collectively away from her home. And Mount Vernon is gorgeous. And she could have just sat there and done nothing. So there's a lot of women in the revolution that have done amazing things that they just don't maybe get their 15 minutes, which is why on my podcast, I have not one, but two episodes, bonus episodes of amazing women. And we talk about them and what they've done and what they've experienced. And I think your book, you know, people will learn the importance of the fundamental virtues of the leadership that these men and women gave us. There's awesome, inspiring stories, which make us feel good for sure. But through those stories, you really learn how to be a critical thinker. And really, you kind of demonstrate how to experience being patriotic and patriotism as a whole. And patriotism to me is more than putting your flag out on Flag Day and the 4th of July. And I get it. Some people aren't as psychotic as about the American Revolution as I am, and that's fine. But at minimum, you should understand who was behind, who had a feather in their hand, a quill in their hand, who created our country, how it was formed, why it was formed. And those values are so important that they can't be forgotten. And what your book does is it is a great reminder, but it's using their own words to help us bridge that gap, because we think of Washington, you know, he's so big that in our mind, we just think he's a statue or he's just carved in marble and he's a marble. George Washington and John Adams and Jefferson and all of them, they were human beings and they had flaws and they were very emotional. Thomas Jefferson, when his wife died, was out of the picture, out of the limelight, never spoke to anybody for months. John Adams got to live to the ripe old age of 90. In fact, oddly enough, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on the exact same day within hours of each other on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration, which I did a podcast on that too. But George Washington, right, Mr. Stoic, Mr. Quiet, which he was, he listened more than he spoke. But George Washington, if he got angry and he didn't control it, which he usually did, he was a man to be reckoned with as far as his temper. But these were real people and they weren't perfect. And understanding how they grew up, how they were all put in the same time frame to create a country is important. And your book really helps bridge the gap in addition to many other amazing things that's contained in the book. So again, values we hold dear. The link is below in the notes, in the description for both the podcast and our YouTube video. All right. So after you read this, you're going to probably want more. Anything in the works for a second book, or do you have anything upcoming that you can or want to share?
Sure. No, I do. I have big dreams. So I would like to make this a series. So this is just the beginning. I am working on a series of stories to say, for instance, if I were to talk about, the reason why Standing for Old Glory is important. Yeah, write a bunch of stories of patriotism and why patriotism is important. So I'm looking at expanding this down the line, or critical thinking using education. We believe in education and critical thinking, not indoctrination, and why that's important, and where in history those were societies and nations and even empires have fallen because they've lost touch with critical thinking. So I have this whole set of ideas. I'm looking at doing, I do have a Substack, and I'm starting to do stories in a shorter format to help emphasize these points, but doing in such a way to remind us that we need to defend the values we hold dear in order to be free in our society.
Amen. If anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
The only other thing is that, again, the written book is important, but for those of you who do like audio, I do have the book in audio format as well. I did hire an amazing voice actor by the name of Andy Kaufman, and I also incorporated some music. So I actually had some music written.
Oh, nice.
And incorporated into it too. And the music kind of, at the beginning of the chapter, kind of sets the tone, sets the mood of the chapter before it actually commences.
Nice.
So if you prefer audiobooks, it's a audio treat as well, if you will.
Oh, great. If somebody had the question or just wanted to reach out to you, can they just do that on your website?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. www.valueswehold dear.com, all one word.
All right.
www.valueswehold dear.com. Kyle.a.stone@valueswehold dear.com.
And I will have all of those links, but yeah, reach out. He's exceptionally busy, but I'm sure he'll take time to answer your emails. And thank you for joining me today and talking about your book and your background and why and how this book came to be. I think it's a treasure trove. You kind of mentioned it's what do you call those backpacks on ready a go bag?
It's a medical kit.
Yeah, medical kit. It's just
ammunition box and a field manual all wrapped in one.
It is, and it's a great. It's just a great book. So I will not go into that again. But really, order 5, handout 4, keep 1. Get some of these magnets. It's a great reminder to have around your house or your work. It's a great talking point because there's so many neat stories in this book that you can share and pretty much come across as an expert in the American Revolution or that particular topic that Kyle lines out so easily for us to remember and relay those stories. So Kyle, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I appreciate this book. And I really appreciate your time because I know you are beyond busy. And everyone listening, look down below. I'll have all the links. Click on that and order the book. It'll take you right to the Amazon page. And obviously you can find the Audible portion there. And I'll also have a link to his website. So if you have questions for him, reach out to him. And otherwise, thank you again. And I appreciate all that you do for our country and for the people that want to learn more and be inspired to have some ideas and tips and tricks on how you can make a bigger impact in your beliefs for this country.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being here. Wonderful, wonderful interview.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening and hope that you tune in next time with us here at the Patriot Power Podcast. Make sure that you hit subscribe so you'll get notified when our new episodes are available for you. And we hope that you check out our websites, which include our show notes, links, documents, and more at patriotpowerpodcast.com or ilovegeorgewashington.com. Until next time, hope that you and your family have a blessed week. And remember, be safe and tell a veteran thanks for their service.